2525. It's Butler County's only live call-in talk show. It's your turn. Weekdays from 1230 to 2 on 680 AM WISR and worldwide on the internet at WISR680.com. It's your turn. 724-283-2525. And now, it's your turn with Dave Malarkey.
Well, good afternoon. Welcome. Nice to have you with us on the Wednesday edition of It's Your Turn. I thought last week was a bit of a drag. This week is flying. My goodness, it's Wednesday. We're halfway through already. And boy, we're getting close to the end of September, aren't we? Doesn't feel like it. Temperature, have you checked it lately, folks? It's 87 in Butler right now. 87, and we're just past 12:30 in the afternoon. Been quite a stretch. Coming to an end today, too, by the way. We have a good program today. We're going to be talking a little bit later about rebuilding cities after disasters, natural or otherwise. And what a guest we have. He's a former deputy mayor of New York City. And his name is Dan Doktoroff. He was a deputy mayor under Bloomberg. And they took over shortly after the 9/11 disaster. Rudy Giuliani was the mayor of New York when it happened, but then he left office and Bloomberg came in. And so we'll talk with Dan Doktoroff a little bit later on the program today. And the topic after that is sauerkraut. Sauerkraut. And I didn't know this. First of all, I didn't know that a lot of people made sauerkraut, made their own sauerkraut. I guess it's like wine. Some people make wine. We'll talk to a lady, God bless her, she's been making it for decades, Ruth Toma, who's 86 years old, and I'm interested to pick her brain and find out how you do this and how she's been doing it for lo these many years. I don't know, I thought you got it out of a jar on New Year's Eve, you know, that was the end of it. Our first guest is with us here in the studio, not going to be talking about sauerkraut, I don't think, anyway. Bob Dendoy, a long acquaintance of mine and representative of Butler Downtown, the organization that helps to promote the downtown business and retail district and the entire central core, really, of Butler, not just Main Street. Robert, good to see you. Nice to have you back with us.
Good to be here. I would love to talk about sauerkraut.
I love it. I
love it.
I didn't know how they made it. You know, we'll find out a little bit later on the program. It's been, and I hate to, you know, sound bittersweet here, but it's close to the end of the summer. October is just a few days away now, and although there's lots of things happening coming up in the autumn in downtown Butler, it's a good time to look back on what I think was a pretty darn good summer.
Oh, it was a great summer, and yes, you're absolutely right. There's still plenty of things going on. You know, last weekend was indicative of the type of weekend that I'm always ranting and raving about with people when they talk about Butler, because, you know, the knock is always, well, there's never anything to do around here. And last weekend an abundance of things to do. And it was really kind of funny because I usually will post that rant on Facebook, you know, there's never anything to do around here, but, okay. And on just Saturday alone was the big fall festival, which went extraordinarily well. Our congratulations to the committee and everyone that put that together. And then also over at St. Michael's Church was the Festa Italia that was going on mm-hmm. over there, which again went super well. I went over on Sunday and had a good time, and it was happening on Sunday. So I put this on and said, yeah, there's never anything to do. You know, choose between one of these great festivals. And then somebody said, yes, and don't forget, on Sunday at Alameda, there was also a festival going on at Alameda Park. So there's never anything to do in this town, you know.
It was also the weekend for the Heritage Festival at McConnell's Mill.
Correct.
Which they do every year.
That's right.
The artisans right. and everything like that.
Right. And now here we are at another point in time where it's been a great summer, but there's still lots of stuff happening. We were just talking before we went on the air, of course, about Little Theater is opening a new show, and pretty soon it'll be symphony concert, mm-hmm. and all of these things that happen in our community that really people do not avail themselves of these things. And so when you say, you know, there's nothing to do, just think about that a little bit. What are you taking advantage of?
I have to tell you a little anecdote about that, and I'll always remember this. When I was a freshman in college, and I, you know, met my roommate for the first time, I had a name. They sent me a name. I knew he was from Philadelphia. So he was from, it was the section of Philadelphia, I want to say Overbrook. I'm not sure. I don't know Philly that well. I know it was the section of town that Wilt Chamberlain, they were still talking about. Wilt Chamberlain went to high school an hour, you know. Anyway, he was from Philly. And one day over the course of that freshman year, we were, you know, chatting over coffee or something, and he actually made this statement. He said, well, you know, Philadelphia, there's nothing to do.
Oh, my goodness.
I just about fell off my chair. Really. I said, you, that just goes to show you that there are people who are going to talk negatively no matter where they are.
Yeah, well, you know, and this is a good topic and appropriate that I mentioned this. About a week or so ago, we had a dedication ceremony at the Little Red Schoolhouse. It was a project that was undertaken by Butler Downtown. Several years ago, we lost, tragically, our young Main Street manager, Becky Smith. Lovely, very bright young girl who was tragically killed in an auto accident. And donations started to come in, and after a while, and it took a while to get decisions made and, you know, to go through the channels of a volunteer organization. But we finally took on this project, the behind the Little Red Schoolhouse in Butler, which, of course, is owned by the or managed by the Historical Society, was really just a bunch of dirt and bricks, and it really wasn't anything nice back there. And we redid this as a memorial to Becky. It's a beautiful little garden now with a bench and a monument to Becky and plantings and in the future, the master gardeners of Butler County will be taking it over to make sure that it's well kept and very pretty. And it really is. I don't know if you've seen it yet.
I have not.
Take a drive by. Like when you're going to church on Sunday, it's right over there by St. Paul's and the middle school now, the old junior high school. Really lovely. But one reason why I mention this is because on the monument to Becky is a quote that was one of her favorites and has always been one of mine, and it's from The Wizard of Oz. And it was one of her favorite movies. And at the end of the movie, of course, Dorothy says, what I've learned is I know that if I ever go looking for my heart's desire, I won't look any farther than my own backyard. Okay? And I said, this was something that Becky was able to do. She came from Warren, Ohio. And I mentioned this at the dedication in my remarks that we sometimes sit in our homes, and we all do it. And you sit there watching TV, and you start to notice, oh, that needs painted. Oh, look at that crack in the wall. Oh, that's getting a little frayed. And pretty soon you've just nitpicked your own home to death. And then someone walks into your house or your apartment or whatever, and they say, this is so lovely. And you look at them, you say, what? My place? And right, and it's almost like you're incredulous that they're talking about how wonderful your home is. That's Butler. I think we all focus so many times on the negative. Certainly we have problems, okay? Certainly, you know, we have challenges that are in front of us. But at the same time, we have all these wonderful resources and activities and great things. And Becky was able to do that. She was, her interest was in historical preservation. I said when I first came to the work of Butler Downtown, I was one of those ones where, you know, it's an old building, yeah, tear it down, we'll put up a new thing, you know? And Becky was, oh, no. Look and see what that building has, what that represents. Look at this activity. Look at this resource. And it really started to get us all to, you know, look in our own backyards. And I think everyone would do well to take that advice. Look in your own backyard. You know, plus the fact there's probably people in nearby communities that are saying, you know, yeah, our community's no good. You should see what they're doing in Butler, okay? And we have all of these things that have happened over the summer and that continue to happen. A lot of fun.
I did not know Becky well. She was on the program several times when she was the Main Street manager. Certainly not, you know, good friends or anything, but great loss. And what a wonderful gesture to have a garden in her memory.
I think it's good stuff. It's beautiful. Check it out.
She would have loved the – have you seen the 2018 – Historical Society wall calendar yet?
Yes.
It's just out within the past week or so. And it's some of the older buildings downtown with a picture of what they looked like in some cases 100 years ago or 70 years ago or 50 years ago and what they look like today. It's a wonderful juxtaposition.
Well, I don't know if I've ever shared this story with you, that this is another way that I came to this work for Butler Downtown. At one point, the Historical Society contacted me, and they said, we want to have walking tours of downtown Butler. And, you know, you walk up and down the streets, and you talk about the history of the downtown area and the buildings and the architecture and everything like this. And we would like for you to do them. And I said, well, you know, obviously they came to me because of my background in theater and education. I'm not afraid to talk in front of people. And I practiced walking backwards, so it was good. But I said, but I do have a problem in doing this. And they said, what's that? I say, I know nothing about the downtown area and the history of it. Here I was, a lifelong resident. I said, oh, not to worry. We will give you an entire script, you know, of all these things. Mm-hmm. It was the most fascinating thing I've ever done in my life, okay, as certainly as it pertains to Butler. The things I found out about some of the buildings, small little architectural points, things that have walked up and down the street, you know, thousands of times, no doubt literally, and never looked up to say, huh, did you ever notice that before? I mean, that is really something. And the industries and the businesses that were in downtown Butler is really, really fascinating area. And the calendar reflects that. Yeah,
I love those calendars. There are numerous examples we could mention. I still think one of the best ever is the job that the Symphony Association did on the old Davy and Hilliard drugstore.
Great building.
They tore off all the cladding that had been put on that because some bozo thought it was ugly, I guess, and got that beautiful brick underneath with all those architectural elements. And
I know.
Painted up the window frames and got some colorful awnings, and it's a gem.
It is a gem. Yeah. And then you have the other places, like, you know, a relatively new building is the Butler Brew Works. Okay? I mean, this was with Thrift Drug, Eckerd Drug, a couple of other drugs were in there, drugstores were in there. And when the guys came in and decided, you know, this is where they wanted to put the Brew Works, as we all know, it took a long time, but the result has been stunning. I mean, it's a beautiful place. And one of the cool things about it, and I think a lot of people don't realize, is, of course, there were some buildings behind it, including the iconic hot dog shop that were eventually torn down. They were in pretty bad shape, and there was no salvaging those. And they took some of the materials from those buildings. And if you ever go in there where the taps are, there's a brick wall. That brick wall is made out of the bricks from the hot dog shop. The Reiber Block building, there's a big iron facade that was on it on the top of the building that's now in there just as a little architectural addition, you know. And it's great that people do that. And then you go down the street to the Chop Shop, and Bill has done this, you know, this funky urban design in downtown Butler that is really pretty cool, you know. It's a lot of fun. And you can still go through the doors of history walking into Cummings Coffee. It's been there 100 years, you know. It's
that's amazing. Thankfully, has not changed.
It's not changed
at all.
Right back to the sign. I think the sign's still there that minors not permitted to smoke in the parlor. That's always been my favorite.
Bob Dando is our guest. He's a past president of the downtown Butler Group. By the way, just a quick mention before we get on to some of the upcoming activities. The Fall Festival, which was last Saturday, that's operated, that's independent of the downtown Butler Group.
Obviously, there are activities in downtown Butler like the Fall Festival, the Foodie Fridays that we'll mention here in a minute, that these are other groups and other organizations that have put this together. And yes, there was an independent committee, but certainly we trumpet those, we praise those, and it really did end up being a really nice festival.
I think the fact that it was, you know, a summer day
was gorgeous.
Helped out, but I don't think I ever saw as many people at the ethnic festival. Or not the
well,
Fall
it was
festival.
The ethnic festival in days gone by.
Saturday.
And I think another thing, there were things that were great improvements. I, you know, obviously this was a totally new committee, so they have their learning curve and a few growing pains. But I think a couple of things that they did great was the expanded children's section, putting the vendors and booths up the middle of Main Street. I can't tell you how many of our local businesses love that, because in prior years, they were along the sides, and they really, in essence, blocked the local businesses. Nobody went into the businesses. This way, you were exposed to both the vendor and the business as you walked down in between them.
Perfect.
It was great. They had music on three stages. They had lots of food, and which, of course, is the calling card. You know, it is.
Well, it went well. I just want to make sure people knew that that was an independent committee and separate from Butler Downtown, because people, it's easy to get mixed up.
Right.
So October, as we mentioned earlier, is just around the corner, which is Halloween month. And I know your group has been involved in a number of different promotions with Halloween over the past few years.
Right. One of our popular ones, as a matter of fact, we really talked about not doing it this year, and then all of a sudden we started getting these little inquiries on Facebook and an email, and a couple of businesses said, well, when's it going to be? And that's our Halloween hunt. And that's, one of the things we do, there's a lot of stuff that we do for adults, in the downtown area, and certainly the shopping and everything. But we try to do some family-friendly, some kids' activities also. And the Halloween hunt really is our little version of trick-or-treat with a little bit of pizzazz added to it. What will be held on, I believe it's the 28th, Saturday the 28th. The kids start out, they go to the Art Center. Again, another gem in downtown Butler that people sometimes don't even realize it's there. So the kids start there, they do a little craft, there's some refreshments, there's coffee for mom and dad that gets you going. And so they start out there, and then they'll go up the street. We give them a map and a list of different businesses that will be open that morning and have a treat for the kids. And so they can do a little trick-or-treat up Main Street. They end then at the Butler Public Library at the end of the street, where Caitlin Borland and Peter Bess are arranging some program down there, and another little treat from the library. And they've done things in the past, like read books and had a read aloud, and it's great. And it's a great activity for the kids to get into downtown Butler and see our community. There's a nominal fee that we do charge for it, and that's really to just handle some basic expenses. It's $5. You'll be able to sign up on the Butler Downtown website. You go right to the website, and we do it. That's another reason why we set it up with the small fee, is to ensure that we don't get a deluge of kids hitting all the stores at once. Mm-hmm. You sign up for a time, and that way also when you go to the Art Center and you're doing the craft, there's not 500 kids in there. We usually put 15 kids. It usually begins at 10 o'clock. The last group, 12:30, 1 o'clock, depending on what the response is. And you report there, you get a little treat, you get a bag, you get everything that you need to head up on the street and collect all your treats. You end up at the library, and it's a wonderful morning. So the first group is 10.
That's a Saturday, right?
That's a Saturday, correct. Mm-hmm. And the other thing that's great about it, of course, there are the ulterior motives behind it, and that is the number of parents. I'm there, I walk up and down the street and check on things, make sure everything's going smoothly. But the number of parents that will stop me in the street and say things to me like, God, it has been ages since I've been in Miller's Meats. I have forgotten what a great store that is. I've forgotten how cool Cummings is. I haven't been, past this place or that place in ages. I didn't even know we had X business, And so we then fulfill our mission as Butler Downtown to bring people into the downtown area to increase that consumer traffic for the stores and the restaurants that are down there. And of course, what we encourage everybody to do is come on down, do the Halloween hunt, go and have lunch, and stay in downtown Butler, because we have all these wonderful places to dine now, and it'll be a lot of fun for you. It's a great day.
That's Saturday, October 28th, right at the tail end of October, which is when Halloween occurs, and that will be a fun event. Look, I imagine it won't be too long before that opens up on the website and people can start.
Yeah, it'll be real. I'd say give us a week.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
You can start making reservations for that. I know that it's the end of September, but the farm market, just three blocks off Main Street down on Chestnut there, has really had a resurgence in the past couple of years because you've added so much stuff. Is that still open?
It is still open, and yes, it has had a resurgence. It's really been a lot of fun to see what that market is becoming now. Whereas for many years, I mean, long time ago, it was a very vibrant place with a lot of farmers. And then it kind of just tapered off until really it was a few farmers that came down on Saturdays, occasionally on Wednesdays, and put out their wares, and a few people would come, and then really started to taper off. It was put under Butler Downtown's management several years ago, and at first we, you know, left it to its own devices. Mm-hmm. But finally, a couple years ago, we said, you know, this could be more. And we started to work with the market in promoting it more, getting immersed, more diverse vendors and farmers there, so that now on Saturday mornings it has become a social activity. We see people come down there every week. We've had a wide variety of things happening. Now, certainly the core of the group is our farmers, okay? We have incredible people like the farmers' wives. That these women have great produce, and they have other things like soaps and herbs and all kinds of things. We have Five Element Farm, people like organics. Morton's are down there. They have microgreens, which is a big, huge thing right now. Schramm Farms, Grimm Farm, Bluebird Flower Farm. I mean, we have all these things. But then we started adding things like one weekend, Barry Cummings came down with the new Cummings coffee truck. At the beginning of the year, he was just in one of our stalls with the table, and now he has the truck, and we're hoping he gets back there a couple of times before the end of the season. Check Facebook and things like that when, for the little announcements as to who's going to be there. We've got in the corner a family, a Greek family that's coming in, and they do gyro sandwiches and baklava and, you know, stuffed grape leaves and everything. Oh, my God, this food is incredible. I mean, people come down there and they say, well, I'm coming every week just to get this. All right, it's amazing.
My big, fat Greek gyro.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Well, that's not a knock. That's a takeoff on the extremely funny film. Still funny.
Wonderful.
That film is like Groundhog Day. Doesn't matter how many times
still
I've seen it,
yep.
I still laugh.
Yep. And you start saying, say a little prayer. All right. You know? And then we also have bakery items. Grandma Betty's down there with a great, you know, like zucchini bread, and she makes this thing called pineapple bread that is just, it's like, you know, banana bread, but it has pineapple in it. It's one of my favorites. And she has cookies and pies and all these things. We've had McLaughlin Distillery a couple of times. I'm hoping to get them back before the end of the season. So we have, you know, quite a diverse, awesome Acres. They have jams and jellies and sauces. We have a great time down there. And again, a real social environment. Along with that, there's music. Every Saturday from 10 until 12, we've had incredible musicians down there, some of which it's that almost cliche moment where we're all standing around the market, we turn and we look and we go, wow, who is that kid? You know, who is that person? And they do a wonderful job. It's a lot of fun.
If you've not been there, folks, for goodness sakes, the Butler Farm Market, now under the auspices of the Butler Downtown Group, is three blocks off Main. It's on Chestnut Street, very near the intersection with Cunningham, just one building away. I mean, it can't miss it if you get out on Chestnut Street.
And if you just go right at the courthouse, go right down over the hill, it's at the bottom of the hill.
Easy
way to do it. Open every Saturday, 8 a.m. until 1 p.m. It will be open through the end of October. We also have, with that, a great Kids Day coming up at the market. That's on October 14th. So we encourage, again, there's another kids' activity. Oh, there's nothing to do in this town. the Butler Public Library will be there. Kids, well, supplies last, as the disclaimer goes, get a free book, okay, when they come down. They have a book reading, some fun activities like that. on that day, we'll also do pumpkin decorating. Each kid will get a little miniature pumpkin, and they'll get to decorate the pumpkin that day.
That's the 14th, did you say?
That's the 14th of October.
Saturday, October. That's all Saturdays.
Yeah.
That
activity doesn't begin right at 8. That would begin probably at around 10, mm-hmm. And 9:30, 10 o'clock start, you know, coming down with the kids. And, again, great fun. And then while you're there, you eat your produce and your baked goods and listen to some music, and it's a great time.
And by the way, don't worry if it happens to be, a bit of a drizzle or occasional spitting rain, because they've redone the whole concept there. It used to be, if the last time he was there was years ago, it was like open stalls. They had a roof, but a concrete pad. But now it's all been closed in, and if the weather does happen to be a little inclement, you're fine.
And that is another one of those things that people don't know that we have in this community. That isn't something that most communities have. I was down in Pittsburgh a couple of weeks ago going through the north side and that park right in front of Allegheny General Hospital. Mm-hmm. They have a farmer's market there. I was in Clarion, and they have one there. They're out in the open. They're just in the park. If the vendor has a tent, maybe a tent if you're lucky. Maybe, if they're lucky. Or just the sun beating down on the hot pot parking lot. That's where most communities have their farmers markets. We have this wonderful building, great big huge garage doors that pop up. So if it does rain and get too bad, we can even bring those down. Mm-hmm. But most of the time we have them up, the breeze is blowing through. It's a great facility to have. It was redone with a grant from the state of Pennsylvania several years ago, and it's lit, and there's a restroom, and it's great, you know, to come down. And, again, you're right. Don't worry. It's a little inclement weather. We're still going.
And you're going to open, and I'm glad you mentioned that, because I wouldn't have guessed you're going to be open through the end of October.
Right. Well, that's right now is when a lot of the great fall crops are coming. Now, you'll see, for those of you that are the most avid customers of the farm market, in a couple of weeks here, things will start to taper off. There'll be a fewer vendors. We'll be consolidating a little bit because the crops are now going. They've harvested everything, but certainly the fall is a great time for a lot of fall crops, and you get things like garlic and certainly pumpkins and some squashes are still in, and they'll all be down there selling those products.
And, of course, all of your other items that you mentioned as well. Again, Chestnut Street, three blocks off Main for the farm market, the Butler Downtown Fall Market. Coming up, we just had a story about this on the news this week, Monday morning, I believe. The big fall cleanup is just around the corner. What's that all about, Bob Dandoy?
Well, this is something that was generated years ago, several years ago now, by the Butler Shade Tree Commission, who we work in cooperation with. Easy to do that because the chair of the Shade Tree Commission lives in my house, right? my wife, Julie, is the chair of the Shade Tree Commission. And this was started as part of the Make a Difference Day that is a national program. And in the spring, they would do the big spring clean, okay? And all the volunteers would come to downtown Butler and literally give it a spruce up, okay? We go up and down the street. We sweep the sidewalks. We clean up leaves. When the spring, we mulch, plant flowers. I'll do all of these things. Weed, anything we can to make sure that the Main Street looks great. Well, it was so successful, and people kept saying, we should do this more often because it looks so nice when we're done. And so they decided to do it again in the fall with the great fall cleanup. And that will be this Saturday, September 30th at 8 a.m. And it lasts, you know, many hands make light work. The more people that come, the quicker we get the work done and get out of there. But they will do the same thing. They will clean everything up. Take the old spring flowers out of the planters that have the arborvitae plants in them, little bushes that go up and down Main Street, which has been a great addition. And they'll put new mums and things to make everything look very fall and very festive and nice looking. And sweeping the sidewalk, anything we can do to spruce up the Main Street area. We need lots of volunteers, lots of volunteers. So if you can help out, bring the kids, bring family. We have lots of families that come down there.
I've seen lots in past years, yeah.
There'll be church groups, Boy Scout groups, everybody. It really is amazing sometimes. And I always have to hold my wife's hand a little bit and say, it'll be okay. She goes, I hope people come. I hope people come. If I have about 10, 12 people, and then we get literally 50, 60, 70 volunteers that'll show up and work that day.
So all you have to do is meet around 8 a.m. this Saturday.
Right, at the North Main parking lot that's what all of us in Butler call the Burger Hut parking lot, the one right across the street from the Burger Hut. Mm-hmm. If you can, it would be great if you could let us know you're coming. You can do that via Facebook. There is an event item on there. You can email Butler Downtown at info@butlerdowntown.org and let us know. I think it's on our website page too. And let Julie know that, you know, I'm coming, I'm bringing some people with me. If you have any appropriate gardening tools, rakes, brooms, things like this, buckets, dustpans, bring those along with you. That's always great. She has a ton that she loads our old Subaru up and we bring it down there. But, you know, the more people we have, the more equipment we have, the better it goes. So
you and I have talked, and I've talked with other people too, including from city government, how when you clean up or when you fix up or paint up, it gets contagious. And you say, well, doesn't that look nice over there? Shouldn't we look nice? I was interested. I haven't talked to these people, so I don't have any inside information. But there's a building downtown. It's Brady and Main, where they're replacing the sidewalks
right
in front of the building. Now, I noticed that a week or so ago, and my first thought was, oh, that's nice, because those sidewalks were kind of cracking up and not so good. And now I went by, I don't know, it was yesterday, and I looked, and it appears they're making space for plantings.
I think they are, yeah.
Yeah, instead of flat sidewalk, okay, we're done, we're out of here. It looks like there's going to be something that goes in there. Yeah.
Well, you know, first of all, I always say, when I was raising my children and they were teenagers, it's not unlike when you make them, force them to clean their rooms, okay? They go in there, they pick up all the clothes, everything gets cleaned up, the room looks great. And amazingly, it stays that way for a while, okay? we know, and we do that in our own rooms, you know, pretty soon a shirt gets thrown on the chair and the pile starts. But for a while, things start to get hung up. Things start to get taken care of a little bit better. Same thing in our downtown area. We also hope, of course, that this will grow exponentially, because one of the things that's in the pipeline right now for Butler Downtown is implementation of our streetscape. This was something that was approved by the city, and we certainly would like to see, you know, originally we thought maybe this would be a piecemeal thing, not unlike what you're viewing at the corner of Brady and Main there, mm-hmm. that businesses would say, hey, you know, things are looking good. I want to, you know, make the front of my store, my building look good. But what we're also hoping is that eventually here, this will become a major infrastructure project. And we've already had some meetings and some conversations with the county and the city and some key people to maybe bring this to fruition, that it would, you know, from one end of Main Street to the other, we would redo it with plantings and lighting and new sidewalks and brick and all those things that would really make it nice. I probably said this a dozen times as you and I have talked. I don't believe in silver bullets. Okay, that, well, if we do that, then Butler, there go all of our problems. That's another game changer, though. It would really be a crucial element in the revitalization of downtown Butler. So
I've seen some communities that have done that, and it makes a difference.
Get out of Beaver, see what they've done on their Main Street. Mm-hmm. It's those couple of blocks. Now, Butler is a little more problematic because it's a huge Main Street, okay? It really is a big one that is both blessing and curse to have that, you know, major highway going right through the town. We have a Main Street area, not a shopping area, a business area. It is a Main Street. That's a great, great asset for the community. And it would really be great if we could keep that moving.
How did Beaver get that wide Main Street? Anyway, it looks like the Champs-Élysées. I never saw a Main Street was that wide.
Amazing.
It had to be something happened. They must have had a fire or something.
Who knows?
Every time I don't go down there that often, but I'm always amazed at how wide that street is. Takes forever to cross it.
Yeah.
We're talking with Bob Dandoy. Listen, I need to squeeze in a break. There's a couple of more. Can you stick around for a few minutes? Because
sure.
I'm not due to talk to Dan Doctoroff here. Obviously, he's in New York, so I'm going to be talking to him on the phone for a few minutes. So if I can take a break, because
sure.
I want to talk with a couple more things with Bob. Now, you're listening to It's Your Turn here on WISR. It's the Wednesday edition. So stick around. We'll take a quick break and be back to talk a little bit more later. Dan Doctoroff, he was the deputy mayor of New York City under Michael Bloomberg, whenever New York was trying to recover, regroup, and rebuild after the terrorist attacks. And the subject will be rebuilding after a disaster. Now, in New York's case, of course, it was a terrorist attack, but look at Houston. Look at almost every city in Florida. Look at the entire island of Puerto Rico. That's very timely. So we'll be talking with Dan about that, and then later on the program, sauerkraut. Where does it come from? Do you dig it out of the ground? Does it come off a tree? No, you make it. And we'll talk to a lady, a wonderful woman, who's been making it for decades. Her name is Ruth Toma. And I just thought it'd be a fascinating human interest story to talk to her about making sauerkraut. So, all that coming up, a quick break, and then back to wrap up with Bob Dandoy. You know, and It's Your Turn on WISR. I'll be right back.
Hop the bus. Leave the driving up to us.
The bus.
We're going your way. Getting there starts here. Just hop the bus. Easy and economical. Just hop the bus. No car, no problem. The bus will get you there. 'Cause that's what we do. Hop the bus. Leave the driving up to us.
The bus.
We're going your way.
Whether you're a backyard car fixer-upper or an auto repair shop, Milich Auto Wrecking is still the place to go for new and used auto and truck parts. They have been for over 40 years. And compared to factory prices, you'll save big bucks. Milich Auto Wrecking is neatly organized and will tell you immediately if they have the part or not. Open Monday through Thursday, 9 to 5, it's Milich Auto Wrecking, Route 38, the Oneida Valley Road. Look for the big black and red sign. Stop by or call 287-1001. And yes, old Uncle Fred still goes to Milich.
Talking for a few more minutes with Bob Dandoy. He's representing Butler Downtown. It's been a very active group for some years now, and I've really made a difference in downtown Butler. Now, that's not just good news for the business district. That's good news for everybody that lives in Butler, around Butler, near Butler. It's the county seat, after all. And people come here not only to shop, but they come here to for professional services, attorneys, physicians, dentists, tax accountants, whatever. So a healthy core, urban core, is good for everybody, whether you live in West Sunbury or right on Main Street. What about the organization? Are you healthy? Are you going strong?
We're going very strong. You know, a few years ago, we made a transition from being an organization that had a paid employee, the Main Street manager. And the model that we had financially wasn't viable anymore. It wasn't working. We found ourselves sort of chasing our tails. What we were doing was simply raising money for this employee, and that was taking up all our time rather than doing the things that we've been talking about so far. That wasn't working, and we decided, well, you know, we got to try something different, at least to get the organization to keep it moving forward. We've done that. Down to a point where we're considering it again. The organization is growing, is financially viable, is healthy, and so we're looking at, it may not be full-time, it may be part-time, bringing back a position like the Main Street manager. Again, we've been talking to people like our certainly great organization that's been there for us all along at the Butler County Chamber of Commerce. We're talking to Butler Tourism about how we can all work together, and certainly the city and the county of Butler, how we can all work together and maybe make this a viable possibility of bringing back a Main Street manager. One of the things you find, and Dave, you know this, you've sat on boards for volunteer organizations, our years at Little Theater and stuff. When it's all volunteer, things fall through the cracks. I'm in a fortunate situation as a retired teacher that I can devote a little more time to some of these things. But, you know, on average, everybody, the people that serve on our board are business people who have businesses, right? They have to take care of the business. That's their number one priority. And so they're doing things like that. In the meantime, we're trying to do these promotions and things downtown, and we need to get other volunteers. So that becomes very problematic. And having somebody there to coordinate those things, make sure paperwork and filings and stuff like that doesn't fall through the cracks, would be very important. And so we're examining that. We're looking in that direction right now.
In the meantime, you kind of wrap up your year in the late fall every year with you have a celebration of the volunteers and so on.
Correct.
And so forth.
Actually, this is something that years ago was mandated by we have a certification in the National Main Street, Pennsylvania Main Street Center, and part of the certification was to have a public meeting to talk about what your group has accomplished. And several years ago, we came upon the idea, you know, getting people to come to a public meeting. Well, doesn't that sound like a great, fun time? And we said, wait a minute, instead of making it a public meeting, because at the meeting we would actually recognize some of our volunteers, let's call it an annual celebration rather than an annual meeting. And so that's coming up on November 9th. And at that meeting, now, again, a celebration, we have an opportunity for all the business people, all the volunteers, anybody that's just interested in what we're doing, wants to see what we've been accomplishing. There are people there from city government, from county government. All these people come together to, and we do talk about, this is what we've accomplished. There is a very short, and I say very short, presentation, so we fulfill that mandate that we have to let people know what's going on. But the main part of the evening is to celebrate. First of all, we pick a business of the year. That will be announced very shortly. Volunteer of the year. And we are now soliciting nominations for volunteer of the year. Again, you can go to the website or Facebook. If you know somebody that's put in a lot of time with our organization and you say, wow, they do so much for Butler and for Butler downtown, nominate them, you know, and we'll consider them. So we have Volunteer of the Year. We acknowledge the work of our president, who would be going off the board, going off that job soon. That would be Tom Graham. And then there's always a couple of little surprises. We've had some great speakers. One year, the guys from Reclamation Brewing came and did a wonderful job. They were hysterical. It was one of the great comedy routines of all time. Last year, we had Lance and Dorothy Calvert from Brushes and Barstools. Great couple, and they were there and talked about their business and really why they decided to invest in Butler Downtown. So it's a great evening. It's a Thursday night, again, November 9th, 5:30. There is no charge. Come, enjoy. We usually have some nice little hors d'oeuvres and things, kind of like a happy hour approach. The guys from Reclamation and Butler Brew Works are usually there to share some of their libations and, of course, soft drinks and coffee and things like that. It's just a really nice time. This year, we're holding it in a new spot. It will be at the Brushes and Barstools business. If you've never been in there, again, it's an opportunity to come in and check that business out. So another
they are great thing. Right beside Miller's Shoes. Huh?
Correct.
Right next
yes.
to Miller's Shoes? I think right it's right next door. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And a nice new business. By the way, I'm impressed by the way this is, again, it's independent from you and Butler downtown, but I just talked with a couple of board members from the Penn Theater Performance Company within the past week, and they are moving ahead much faster than I realized on hopefully gaining control of the long-shuttered Penn Theater.
Yeah, that's another one of those ones that, as I mentioned before, would be a game changer in our downtown area. Because
if it happens, it's not
definitely. If it happens, yeah. It would certainly bring in would give people a reason to always have that reason to come into downtown Butler with events. I don't think anybody ever has envisioned a revitalized Penn Theater as simply a movie palace. It would be movies, speakers, dance recitals, you know, whatever we can they could put in that building would happen. And certainly it's held true in other communities. I go travel quite a bit, and when I go to small towns and I find that there is one of those, you know, restored movie theaters, I check it out and see what's going on. You look at the Strand in Zillionople, the Barrow up in Franklin. They're really important, and the guys and ladies are really working hard to get this off the ground, to get that initial push done, to get the studies done that need to be done, and to work with the Pennsylvania Landmarks and Historical Organization to, you know, free up the finances and get things moving with this.
Well, I knew they were still working on it, and again, it's not a done deal, but I was pleasantly surprised to see how quickly they're moving on it. Hey, there's one other thing. We almost forgot to mention this. Is it this Friday a foodie?
Another Foodie Friday, yeah. Again, this is not an activity that is done by Butler downtown, but we've certainly applauded it, celebrated it, and said, yeah, because it's all of our businesses. Foodie Friday, it's held, again, in that parking lot on North Main Street and the adjacent parking lot in the People's Gas building next to it. There's food trucks from all over the place. I mean, ice cream, pierogies. It just goes through the roof, all the different offerings. Of course, food trucks are the thing, you know. And so you sort of ask yourself, well, why in the world will we have food trucks when we have these great restaurants in downtown Butler? The restaurants are also, you know, just teeming with people, and it's a great vibe. It's a great fun thing. I'd like to take a little credit for the roots of this being planted at one time in our plaza that we had in downtown Butler, which was very successful. And now, you know, with the Foodie Fridays, everybody comes downtown. They talk, they laugh, they have a good time, and they get some really good food.
This is the first summer they've done this, and I'm the very first one. As luck would have it, turned out to be kind of a threatening day. In fact, as I recall, it rained early in the afternoon, because this is an evening, late afternoon, evening thing. And lo and behold, it was throngs of people there.
Yeah, well, the clouds sort of parted, the ray of light came down, and tons of people showed up. And it was unfortunate, because a couple of vendors didn't show because they thought, oh, it's going to be a disaster. It's going to be rained out. And so that made the lines a little longer. But then the next one, they had more vendors, so the lines moved a little faster. I think they're even having even more this time. And again, if you get there and you say, oh, this line's too long, walk right up the street. You've got Natilli's, Pizza Joe's, Natilli Pizza, the Chop Shop, the Brute Works, Reclamation. They're all open and ready to go, and some great food and some great fun. So it's a, you know, Dave, there's nothing to do in Butler, you know.
Bob Dandoy visiting with us here today. Good to see you again, my friend.
Always good to see you. Thank you for the time. Nice to
find out that your group is healthy and still working and still planning ahead toward the future. It's wonderful.
Absolutely. Thank you.
We'll take a break when we come back. Rebuilding cities after a disaster. And we've certainly had enough of those, haven't we? All in the past month, really, with Hurricane Harvey and then Irma and now Maria, which I just heard today is now a hurricane again. After devastating Puerto Rico over the weekend, it drifted off into the oceans. Now it's regained strength. Anyway, we'll be talking with a former, doesn't do that anymore, he has a new business. Maybe we can talk about that with him, too, because he's got a Google thing going now. Former deputy mayor of New York City, his name is Dan Doctoroff, and he'll be our next guest here on It's Your Turn on WISR, coming up in just a moment. We'll be right back.
The Young Funeral Home of Butler invites you to stop by their Jefferson Street location, downtown Butler, to talk about pre-arrangements. Not the easiest thing to do, but necessary. And the Young family will walk you through the process, making it very comfortable and really easy to take care of. You'll experience peace of mind knowing that your wishes and plans will be carried out to the last detail. Call the Young Funeral Home in Butler today to make an appointment with a member of the Young family. Generations of the Young family have been caring for generations of Butler families for well over 40 years. The Young Funeral Home, West Jefferson Street in Butler.
Listeners, coming up on the next segment of It's Your Turn here on WISR, my name is Dave Malarkey. We're going to be chatting with a former deputy mayor of New York City. His name is Daniel Doktoroff, and he's the author of a book that is pretty topical these days in the wake of our natural disasters of the past few weeks. It's called Greater Than Ever, New York's Big Comeback. More on that in a second. First of all, Mr. Daniel Doktoroff, nice to meet you. Nice to have you with us here today.
Well, thanks so much for having me, Dave.
You were deputy mayor in New York City under which mayor, Mr. Doktoroff?
It was Mike Bloomberg, and people may not remember this, but Mike Bloomberg was elected just a couple months after 9/11 and took office just 3.5 months after 9/11. So I came in with Mike, and you know, when we came into office, the city was reeling. In fact, the fires were still smoldering at Ground Zero, and so the real question was, what were we going to do at the site, and what were we going to, how were we going to think about the city more broadly in the face of clearly the most traumatic incident to occur in recent memory?
Yeah, that's, and for those of us who weren't in New York, I mean, it's not that our hearts weren't with you, but you know, when we weren't there. A few weeks, few months after the terrorist attacks, life went on. Meanwhile, you were still left with, in many cases, smoking rubble, and in particular, the tragedy of trying to locate the victims, to locate the dead, which took a long, long time.
Well, to be honest, that's still going on. But, you know, I think what's really important is that out of tragedy can really come triumph. And the way we thought about it, and the title of my book is Greater Than Ever, because New Yorkers really rallied around the cry first of Mayor Giuliani and then Mayor Bloomberg to not just sort of rebuild and kind of put what was there, but to really make the city, the whole city, greater than ever, to in effect honor the people who died by committing ourselves to make the city something even greater than it had been before. And that's really what we set out to do, and that's why I think the story is actually really compelling. It's a story of leadership. It's a story of how you engage a community to talk about what its future ought to be. It's a story about navigating through all of the political and financial and other trials and tribulations to actually achieve something that nobody ever expected would be possible.
So can cities in Texas and Louisiana and Florida and Puerto Rico, can they get a roadmap of coming back from your book, Dan?
Every city is obviously different, and the challenges of each of these disasters are complex and need to be respected for what they are. But I think the basic lessons of how we did it you know, what we did can really be generalized. So, you know, I like to say there were sort of four factors in making New York greater than ever. The first was a catalyst. You know, 9/11 for us was a catalyst. And as tragic as it was, that determination to rebuild and make it better really gave us an impetus to do things that would not have been politically possible or financially feasible before 9/11. The second thing is you have to have a real plan. Now, we were helped in New York in terms of the development of a plan because, you know, I had led New York's effort to bring the Olympics to New York, and that had started before 9/11, and I came into office with Mike Bloomberg kind of with this physical plan for the future of the city. Obviously, it didn't include what happened on 9/11. But we had a real plan that really took into account the city's strengths and weaknesses. You know, self-awareness for a city is just as important as it is for an individual. And you know, we looked at sort of the city, we looked at how we competed with other cities, and we developed a very, very comprehensive plan for the future of the city. The third component is actually a philosophy, and I think this applies to every city. You know, the goal of a city is to grow. You want more people, you want more jobs, you want more visitors because they produce revenue that can hopefully be reinvested wisely in improving the quality of life, which is to attract more people, and you have to do it in partnership with the private sector. And then lastly, you got to figure out how to execute. And execution means coordination among the bureaucracy. It means learning how to communicate with communities. It means clever financing. And it learns, meaning how you sell your ideas. And so I really do believe our experience after 9/11 is a blueprint, not just for cities that have faced disaster, but actually for every city who understands sort of that it's going to have to compete with other cities around the world and around the country in order to attract those people.
Refresh our memory on the Olympics. For what games was New York City attempting to become the host?
We were bidding for 2012, and we ended up losing to London. But a lot of people will say we won even though we lost, because, again, we were able to use even the Olympic bidding process as a catalyst to think about the future of the city and to use the deadlines that the Olympic bidding process imposed to get stuff done a lot faster.
You mentioned a few moments ago that the goal of every city is growth. That has to be planned, however. I've been reading in the wake of the horrendous flooding in Houston, and most of the damage in Houston from Harvey was not from strong damaging winds, but from flooding. And there were several critical reports that I saw in wire stories where they had just apparently the topography there, the terrain is extremely flat, and they just built housing developments until they were coming out of their eyeballs without any thought to what might, you know, to the topography, to what might happen if they had a torrential downpours from hurricanes. Part of the problem, they didn't plan ahead.
Your point is an excellent one. You know, growth in and of itself is not the end. It's about smart growth, and growth that's appropriate for the geography, for the population, for the political system. You know, that's what you've got to do. And so in New York, actually, when we came into office, we said, we're going to rethink the entire city. And in 140 separate actions, we planned separate parts of the city, ultimately constituting 40% of the entire city. In some cases, we made them more dense. In some cases, we prohibited them from becoming more dense. In each case, we had plans for transportation and schools and parks and other infrastructure, all taking into account the unique nature of that community as well as the needs of the city as a whole. You know, we really believed that the answer was not sort of laissez-faire like they did in Houston, or overly planned zoning, you know, which prohibits everything like they might do in San Francisco, but sort of a middle way that we think balanced all the competing needs but kept the city squarely focused on smart growth going forward.
It's interesting, one quick note here before we take a break. You need to keep, for lack of a better word, updating, reviewing the comprehensive plan, which you were given an opportunity to do in New York. I'm thinking of Washington, D.C., which, of course, was a community planned from nothing. It was a swamp area, and I'm trying desperately to think of the name of the landscape architect, and it's escaping me, but he designed the city like the spokes of a wheel, okay? That's why we have those unusual broad avenues in Washington, D.C.
Which is why I get lost all the time.
Exactly. But my point is, I'm not so sure they've updated it, because, you know, the growth in the past 200-plus years, it's a maze down there in many places now. So you got to keep taking a look at it every so often, don't you?
Yeah, now that doesn't mean that you can't. You got to put infrastructure in. You got to give people who are going to invest in the place a sense of predictability. But it doesn't mean that the city can't evolve. I mean, cities are, you know, they're organisms. They're living organisms that need to change as tastes and technologies change. You know, I look at Manhattan. You know, so I live in Manhattan. I didn't grow up there. I actually grew up in Detroit. But, you know, the Manhattan street grid was actually created in 1811 when, you know, Manhattan was basically kind of shoved down into the southern tip of the island. But they planned for it forever. And they created this street grid. And at the time, you know, the fastest vehicle was a horse. But over time, that street grid accommodated streetcars and subways, and eventually it'll accommodate autonomous vehicles. You know, so you've got to make it flexible enough that the city can evolve around it. But it still means, as you point out, that you got to constantly be going back and saying, is the way we've planned this consistent with the needs of the city of the future? And those conversations are important ones that the community has to have, and it has to be led at the end of the day by government that listens well but also has a point of view about the city and its future and its competitiveness. That's what we really tried to do in New York.
Couple of more minutes we have left, listeners, with Daniel Doctoroff. We need to take a quick break, squeeze in here. We'll come back and pick up our conversation with him here on It's Your Turn on WISR right after this break. One of our sponsors on the program today, the Society of St. Vincent de Paul here in Butler. Boy, what work these folks do to help the less fortunate, the needy in our community. They operate their food bank, of course, on Elm Street in the city of Butler, Lower Institute Hill area. They also have their client aid program. And they also have the Society of St. Vincent de Paul thrift store in the greater Butler Mart. And if you haven't stopped in there lately, you ought to take a look. They have a variety of clothing, shoes, miscellaneous items. They've got furniture for a dorm or an apartment, if you know somebody that's in need of that. Yeah, and it's clean, it's neat. They've been down there now for many, many years, and it's quite convenient. Obviously, there's free parking right at the door, Greater Butler Mart. They're about four stores up from Friedman's. If you're not familiar with the Greater Butler Mart, they're right on that side of the Mart. And they're open Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 7 p.m. 9 a.m. to 7 p.m. And they're also open, of course, to accept donations. If you have items that you'd like to drop off there, very easily done. Their drop-off bins are right inside the main entrance, and it's just a few steps from your car. So drop items off. And remember this, all of the proceeds generated from sales of items at the Society of St. Vincent de Paul thrift store, all of the proceeds help support their client aid program, and their food bank. So not only are you helping, if you're donating items, my goodness, you're going to throw them away anyway, right? So think about donating them. And a big thank you to all of the folks who participated in their How Does Your Garden Grow program this summer. That's now closed down, but they took donations of excess produce from backyard gardens every Saturday morning, and it was just marvelous once again this year. A great aid to the families and the individuals who rely on the food bank. So a big thank you from the Society of St. Vincent de Paul, where they like to say, we stand tallest when we stoop to help others. We have more to come on the It's Your Turn program. First of all, in just a moment or so, we'll be wrapping up our conversation with Dan Doctoroff, the former deputy mayor of New York City. Rebuilding cities after a disaster, pretty topical, given what's happened here in our country over the past month, that's for sure. But later still on the program today, we're going to talk about sauerkraut. Stop making sauerkraut. Everybody likes sauerkraut. Most people in my family do. Everybody knows what it is, right? You know what it is? It's fermented cabbage. That's what it is. There are people that make it. And we're going to talk to a lady who's been making sauerkraut for decades. I'm not kidding. Decades. Her name is Ruth Thoma, a wonderful lady. And we'll be chatting with her about making sauerkraut. How do you do it? And we'll talk about the work she's been doing for a long, long time, making it, and how she got started. Assume family recipe handed down, you know, like recipes for cookies are handed down to the generations. Ruth Thoma will be visiting with us a little bit later on the program. Now, coming up tomorrow, we have open talk time tomorrow. If you want to talk about the National Football League and standing or kneeling or whatever during the national anthem, we'll talk about that tomorrow. Also, on tomorrow's program, we'll have guests with us from Armstrong here locally. And we will also talk with another school superintendent. We've talked with the top administrators from schools, many schools around the area over the past couple of weeks. Tomorrow, Dr. Wes Shipley, who is the superintendent of schools in the Mars Area School District, one of the very few that's growing in student population. So Dr. Shipley will be with us tomorrow. It'll be a good program on the Thursday edition. A quick break. We'll be back to talk more with Dan Doctoroff here on the Wednesday edition of It's Your Turn on WISR.
When is the best time to talk to your family about staying in touch during a disaster? When floodwaters reach your door? When wildfires are engulfing the edge of your neighborhood? Or an earthquake is destroying buildings? When a tornado is tearing through town? Or a hurricane strikes? Or is the best time, perhaps, today? During a disaster, you may not be able to stay in touch with your family or friends as easily as you think. And it's not always as simple as using your cell phone. That's why now is the time to take action. Go to ready.gov/communicate and make your emergency plan today. Don't wait. Communicate. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Welcome back. If you're joining us a little bit late, my name is Dave Malarkey on It's Your Turn here on WISR today. We're speaking with Dan Doctoroff. He was the deputy mayor of New York City under Michael Bloomberg, who came into office shortly after the terrorist attacks of 9/11. And I have to ask you, for the purposes of our conversation, let me say this first of all, that we're talking with Dan Doctoroff about his new book, Greater Than Ever, New York's Big Comeback. I have to ask you what it was like working for Michael Bloomberg at that time, working in government, for goodness sakes, at that time in New York City, just shortly after the terrorist attacks.
You know, it was exhilarating. It was exhausting. You know, I felt like I was, you know, under most intense possible pressure. I had a dream, a recurring dream, that I was underwater, and every time I started to swim to the surface, a big hand came down and plunged me under. And that dream kept happening for about 2 years till I felt like I was on top of the job, because the stakes were so high. You know, after 9/11, our economy was just devastated. Obviously, a whole section of the city had been destroyed. People's emotions were really raw. And so we felt an incredible imperative to get it right. But I think the thing that's really important is we didn't just stop at ground zero. We looked at the entire city, just added more pressure to it. But at the end of the day, it worked out phenomenally well. I think anybody who visits New York sees how different it is. You know, Ground Zero is rebuilt. The whole area around it is just sparkling. The city itself is filled with new parks and new neighborhoods, new commercial districts. We've got more residents. We've actually, since 9/11, added about 600,000 people to New York City. The number of visitors has gone from 35 million to 60 million. We've added about 600,000 jobs in the city. And so, you know, it worked. So all of that pressure and all that hard work really did pay off.
So what are you doing now, Dan Doctoroff? You've got a new project, a new company going, don't you?
I do. So about 2 years ago, I teamed up with Google to form a new company. It's called Sidewalk Labs, and our mission is to use technology, particularly digital technologies, to improve life in cities, make them more inclusive, make them more affordable, make them easier to get around. And the way in which we want to do that, believe it or not, is we want to build a small city. We want to build a district, really, of a city that will be the most technologically innovative place in the world, that will pioneer or adapt on an integrated basis new solutions for mobility and infrastructure and buildings and open space and even social and community services. And so we're right now in the process of discussing kind of with cities where we might do that, and we'll be moving forward relatively soon.
It's interesting, within the past few weeks, there's been word that Amazon is looking for a second headquarters, if you will, here in the continental U.S., branching out from Seattle. I realize that's a little bit of a competitor to you now in certain ways, but isn't it fascinating already the way cities are scrambling to make offers to Amazon?
That is absolutely true. And, you know, I think what Amazon, you know, clearly is focused on the economics, but they also want to be in a place that has a really strong technology-driven culture. And I think they want to be important to the place that they locate the second headquarters. You know, by those standards, I think Pittsburgh probably might have a really interesting shot.
Speaking of which, Google has an interesting presence in Pittsburgh already.
Yep.
In fact, they've just expanded it. And in an area of the city, this is what we've been talking about the whole time here today, reviewing master plans, comprehensive plans. It's in an area of Pittsburgh called the East End that was in tremendous decline. I have not visited the Google operation, but it's in part of a repurposed a bakery. It was a gargantuan Nabisco plant. In fact, the new address is Bakery Square, and there's all kind of high-tech, cutting-edge companies in there in addition to Google. Pretty neat, just what we were talking about.
Yeah, and it's funny because Google also has major operations in a former Nabisco plant in Manhattan as well, where they made Oreos originally. So maybe it's something about Oreos that Google really likes.
Could be. Dan, thanks for spending. Nice to meet you, by the way. Thanks for
spending time with me. Yeah, you too. I really enjoyed it, Dave.
Daniel Doktoroff, listeners, author of Greater Than Ever, New York's Big Comeback. Certainly applicable to rebuilding cities after disasters. Thanks again, Dan. Thanks again. So long now.
Does your pharmacy tell you your wait time for a prescription will take a half an hour or longer, or maybe won't even be ready until the next day? Don't think this is your only option. At Institute Hill Pharmacy, we have made it a priority to take care of our customers' needs first because your time is precious. Most wait times are under 10 minutes. So don't you think it's time to make a switch to Institute Hill Pharmacy, located at 937 East Jefferson Street, or find us on Facebook, Institute Hill Pharmacy, an old-fashioned pharmacy just the way you remember.
I can't remember the last time I went to the dentist. Now I'm too embarrassed to go because my teeth are in such bad condition.
Unfortunately, this person is not alone. Many folks put off going to the dentist because they fear being scolded for neglecting their teeth. This is Dr. Bob Todd with a special message. Dentistry today is faster, easier, and better than ever before. At our dental office, we don't believe in making you feel guilty, no matter how long it has been since you've seen a dentist. We know fear and embarrassment can cause a cycle of procrastination. If it has been years since you've been to the dentist, call us today. We will help put your mind at ease and bring your smile back to health.
If you hate going to the dentist but know you have a dental problem, help is only a phone call away. Dr. Bob Todd and his friendly dental team will answer all your questions and care for all your concerns. For complimentary information or to schedule an appointment at their Butler office on Evan City Road, please call 282-7774 or on the web at butlersmiles.com.
We are going to be talking for the next few minutes here, listeners, on the It's Your Turn program. My name is Dave Malarkey. You know, this is the season when you make sauerkraut. And we have come across a woman who has been making sauerkraut herself for many, many years, decades, in fact. Her name is Ruth Toma, and she's visiting with us on the line right now. Ruth, good to talk with you. Are you prepared to tell us a little bit how you make sauerkraut?
Yes, it may take a little while if you want me to tell you how.
Well, we'll talk a little bit about it.
First of all,
how long have you been doing this?
25 years.
Oh, my. And how did you get started doing it, Ruth?
Well, my sister had a business in Dillinople, and she started by having a fall festival thing at her business. And she had marked out areas that, you know, the different ones could set up, and she had one left over, and she says, how about you showing them how to make sauerkraut? I said, I only do it for myself. And she said, well, I need somebody to fill in that space. So my sister-in-law and I each got, we got between us $10 and 10 pounds of hot dogs and kielbasa. She wanted us to cook it too, you know.
And then sell it to the sauerkraut. Yeah.
And so we thought, well, if it don't sell, we'll each take so much home. Well, that, we just had a crock pot and a electric skillet. And I tell you, we started out open about 9 o'clock in the morning. By 12, we were sold out. And we had to go across the street and buy a gallon of kraut, fix it up, and get more dogs and so forth. And that's what started out.
So had you already been making sauerkraut prior to that time, so you already knew how to do it?
Yes, I've been doing it for myself.
I see.
And my mother taught us how, or me how.
Well, this is the time of the year, right? In late September, am I correct on that?
Yes, because this is the only time you use, this is a late cabbage.
Okay.
Is in the season. And you can only use the late cabbage, or the fall cabbage, what they call it.
And
then that goes on to another process of you got to cut it in half, take the core out, and you got to grate it, and you got to pound it until the water comes up to the top, and you got to seal it off. And there was an old way, and then now there's a new way of using the plastic bags in one inside the other, and you put that over your top of your grated cabbage, and you pour water in. The water makes its weight, and it closes out the air.
Well, tell me, I'm a little bit confused about the pounding of the cabbage. So you grate it up. I can see that. I can picture that in my mind's eye. I have this grated cabbage. And then did you say you have to pound it?
Yeah, you stomp it down. Now, I really went in about, grate about 4 inches in the crock. And then you salt it, re-salt it.
Okay.
And then you pound it. You may not get the liquid out of the cabbage right away, but as you go, alternate all up through the crock, and you pound after each session. By the time you got that crock filled, you will have the water coming out of the cabbage.
And what do you use to pound it with?
We have a stomper.
Okay.
It's wood, made out of wood, and it's been around. I've had it for years, and
I'm wondering if whenever they were making sauerkraut back in the olden days, and because it was really very popular in Europe, Central and Eastern Europe, I'm wondering if they ever stomped on the cabbage like they do grapes.
Yes, I even have that written down here, but I didn't know if that would be interesting enough. But they did buy the barrel also back in there, and that was the only thing they could do to have the weight, because they didn't have enough people to stomp it with a stomper. So they would, you know, clean the feet up and go in and do it that way.
Now, what else do you put into the crock after you get the cabbage all shredded and then you get it all stomped and the water comes out of it? What else do you put in the crock?
Okay, what I missed out in telling you, using as you alternate, every time I do the about 4 inches, I would put the salt in.
I see.
And then I pound that. And you alternate that. So all it is cabbage and pickling salt. And pickling salt is very important because it's a stronger salt than our table salt.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, or the canning salt.
So then that starts the fermenting process. That's what the salt does, huh?
Yeah, the salt brings the juice up on top. And then this is when you seal it off, because in the old way, they didn't have a tight fit for anything.
Mm-hmm.
And they usually used a plate and a cloth and a rock.
I see.
And it would smell terribly.
I can imagine.
And in the winter, every fall, everybody's house smelled the same because everybody was doing sauerkraut.
Now, tell me here, because our time begins to run out, how long do you have to let this sit in the crock before it ferments and becomes sauerkraut?
About five to 6 weeks.
Oh, wow. Long time, huh?
Yeah, it's all right. Yeah, it has to take time to cure all the way down through.
Now, what after it's cured, after it's turned into sauerkraut, what do you do with it then, Ruth? Do you can it or freeze it, or how do you preserve it?
Some people freeze it, which I'm not too fond of.
Mm-hmm.
But then they can, if the container is small enough, they can eat out of it as long as it's refrigerated.
Okay.
Or you can it, and that's what I do with mine because I can it.
Well, let me ask you a little bit about. Do you know how far back sauerkraut goes?
Yes.
Do you know when people started eating sauerkraut, Ruth?
It goes back as far as building the China Wall.
The Great Wall of China, really? Wow.
Yeah, huh. Fed the workers on it.
Hmm.
And it's great vitamin C, which helped because in those days or even now, vitamin C was very hard to get anything like that for.
Yeah, there are some. A lot of people even today say there are health benefits of sauerkraut. For a lot of people, of course, it's a traditional meal at New Year's, right?
Oh, my, yes.
Yeah,
oh,
yeah,
yes. That's a big time.
So, listen, before we run out of time here, you don't mind if I tell people how old you are, right? Is that okay?
No, and that's the reason why, one reason I need help as far as I can't do this anymore.
Ruth Toma, listeners.
There's no demonstrators 4 miles around or not even that I know of.
Ruth is 86, listeners, 86 years old. She's been doing this forever. And you don't want the tradition to die. You want to try to find somebody to take over for you because, my goodness, you're not going to be able to do this much longer, right?
No, I am going to do a barrel yet for canning, but I'm canning that to have for next fall. Hopefully I have somebody replace me by then.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very gratifying. It's nice to meet the people, and it's very, and it's not real hard work. It's only seasonal. And
now, do you go out and give demonstrations at festivals and stuff about this?
You mean information out?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah, I do it step by step for people. I show how to cut the cabbage in half. You take the core out and do all the steps,
mm-hmm.
and all the way through doing the crock and filling up the cabbage.
It's fascinating me because I like sauerkraut, but I had no idea how it was made. Number one, I had no idea you could make it, you know, at home. So you've been a real learning experience for me.
And I've also showed. Can I mention a business name? Thomas Meat Market.
Sure, sure.
Thomas Meat Market. I showed them how years ago,
uh-huh.
we started out little by little, and and now we're up to 11 and 12 barrels.
Wow. That's in your family, obviously, right?
Yes. Thomas, yeah, it's the market. And we get in 3,000 pounds of cabbage from Jetstead. And it comes in on a dump truck.
I can imagine.
And it takes two men to feed the cutter that we have made.
Wow.
And by the time, in one day, we have that cut up.
Wow.
And grate it in the barrels.
How did you learn this originally? Did your mom or your grandmother or somebody show you how to do this?
Probably my mom, and she learned from her mother.
Yeah, passed down through the family, huh?
Yes, uh-huh. Passed down. And like I said, it started out, I only made for myself, and my sister is a pusher, and she always tries to do everything and get everything just right. So
if somebody's interested, in picking up the where you're going to be leaving off here, can they get in touch with you? Is that what you'd like them to do, Ruth?
Well, yes, I do.
Okay.
Can I leave a phone number?
Sure. Go ahead.
Okay, that's 724-287-5007, and it's Ruth Toma.
Okay.
And I would have everything for somebody to start out with.
Well, that's wonderful.
Because I want to shut it down, but I don't want it to get lost.
I think that's a wonderful sentiment. I can understand. Let me give that number again, make sure I got it right. 287-5007, right?
Wait a minute.
2828?
Yeah, 724.
Yeah, 724-287-5007.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry,
and,
I didn't mean that.
And people are interested. It keeps me busy talking around, talking and showing them how.
Wow, it's a fascinating story. I'm interested. I thought our listeners would be interested in it. That's why I wanted to chat with you here today.
Okay.
It's fascinating. I didn't know that it was made around here to this quantity. My goodness gracious, that's terrific.
Well, I think there is a few other people that are in the meat business that might be doing it, but I don't know how much, but I know how much we do out there, and it's and we, like I said, we get done one day. It's unreal, and we have it. Everything moves along pretty fast.
Tell me, and one more question, Ruth, before we have to go. Do you like sauerkraut?
Oh, yes, I do.
I'll bet you do.
Yes, I do.
You know what? I like it especially. I know a lot of people eat it on hot dogs. I like it with pork. That's my favorite way to eat sauerkraut.
All right. Yeah. Here's what I'm going to give you. The reason we made out so good when we were selling it with the hot dog and kielbasa, I always cooked a broth of pork bones.
Oh.
Then I strained it off. I made sure there was no shards of bone in there.
Mm-hmm.
And I would add that to my kraut that I was selling and cook it for a while.
A little secret ingredient, huh?
Yes. And this is how people thought it was so different. Because it tastes different. A lot of people just open up the sauerkraut and heat it up and put it on hot dogs and that. I cook it for a while.
Ruth, I have to go because we're out of time.
Okay.
You are a treasure. Thanks so much for chatting with us here today. I know I'm serious. I really enjoyed it. Thanks for spending a few
Thank
minutes.
Thank you very much.
Sure. Good to talk with you, Ruth. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Midday lottery numbers for you today. The pick 2 is 8787. The pick 3, 922922. The pick 4, 5718. The pick 5, 33261. The wild ball for each of those is 7. The treasure hunt, 11, 15, 16, 17, and 30. Estimated jackpot for tomorrow's treasure hunt is $10,000.
Maybe it's a pair of shoes, maybe it's a certain bike, maybe it's a certain mattress. Whether you're running, biking, or even sleeping, the equipment you use matters. Beautyrest provides equipment for high-performance sleep to help you perform better than ever. For a limited time, get great deals on select Beautyrest mattresses during the Beautyrest High Performance Sleep Sale. Find a retailer at beautyrestretailers.com.
Introducing a new cooking podcast. Now that's a mouthful. This weekly program explores the shared experience of cooking and the challenges of preparing new and different recipes. Discover something new, whether you're a raw beginner or a seasoned pro in the kitchen. New episodes of Now That's a Mouthful are available every Wednesday. Start listening today at nowthatsamouthful.org or on your favorite podcast app.
We thank our guests on the program today. Bob Dandoy visiting with us earlier today. Also, very nice to meet and chat with Dan Doctoroff, former deputy mayor of New York City, talking about rebuilding cities after disaster. And what a special treat to chat with Ruth Toma today. Folks, I want to tell you, she's 86 years old, and it's not real easy to come on the radio and talk with us at that age. So I think she's terrific. That's fascinating. Thank you, Ruth. And thank you, listeners, for being with us today. Coming up on tomorrow's program, I understand we have a chance now. We're trying to make last-minute connections with did you hear the story about the TV fishing show that's going to be filming out at Lake Arthur Marine State Park? This week, I think they're out there with their video cameras. We're working on that to talk with one of the producers of that show. Also tomorrow, a guest from Armstrong visiting with us. And also Dr. Wes Shipley, who's the superintendent of schools.